everybody. We've got a great one today. Finally, Harry Littman joins us. You know Harry. He's joined us before. He is a former U.S. Deputy Assistant Attorney General and host of the Talking Feds podcast. Well, this past week, J.D. Vance, Marco Rubio, Jared Kushner, and Steve Witkoff went to Israel to revive the peace process in Gaza, the 20-step plan. Step one worked very well, exchange of hostages and prisoners. That was great. Congratulations to Trump. You know, actually, I don't know whether Hamas disarming is part of step one or step two. Hamas so far refuses to disarm, and they've gone on a killing spree of Palestinian family groups who sided with the Israelis. Trump said for some reason that he was okay with that. But Hamas killed a couple of Israeli soldiers, and Israel responded, killing 45 people. So it's just all so tragic. That's why I really hope and pray that these guys get this 20-part plan figured out and implemented. But so far, this all continues to look a little shaky. I just hope for the sake of Trump's Nobel Peace Prize next year that he and his team get steps 2 through 20 together. So the estimate for Trump's White House gilded ballroom just went up to $300 million. Don't worry, we, the taxpayers, aren't paying for it. It's being covered by the rich and powerful who are seeking favors from Trump. So I guess we will be paying for it in the end. Too bad the old East Wing is gone. But, you know, that's progress. And Trump wants the Justice Department to pay him $230 million for everything it put him through, the Mar-a-Lago documents case, the 2016 Russian election interference case, the January 6th case, all of which he was guilty of. The Justice Department, of course, is run by, well, him. So as he says, he's suing himself. He says he'll give the money to charity. Here's a good charity, the Justice Department. Well, the shutdown continues, now becoming one of the longest in history. Federal employees are now working unpaid and will miss their first full paycheck next week, not to mention SNAP benefits will run out of money come November. Folks are about to just really feel the shutdown, and it's over healthcare. Of course, Americans are already seeing their ACA premiums for next year skyrocket, and so many of these people are in southern states and in rural areas, but will Republicans break? Of course not. Well, over 7 million people attended the I Hate America rallies last weekend. Approximately a million of them were members of Antifa, or were paid by George Soros to attend. Trump released an AI-generated video of him wearing a crown, piloting a fighter jet, and spewing AI-generated shit all over the 7 million protesters attending the rallies. You got to hand it to him. Obama would never have thought of that. Well, we got a great one today. You know, for a change, Harry Littman joins us to talk about some important legal stuff. Welcome back.
Hey, Al.
Yeah, it's been a while. Thanks for doing this.
My pleasure.
I want to go over some legal stuff with you, because that's what you do.
Okay. I'm the right guy, I think.
Specifically, I want to get into a few things. The retribution prosecutions, Comey and Letitia James and Bolton. And I'm sure there's more to come, right?
So he says, yep. Adam Schiff, Andrew Weissman. Yeah, he's got a whole gallery of villains.
And then I want to talk about what Trump's been trying to do in Portland and Chicago and probably elsewhere, and where that's going. And are we looking at him invoking the Insurrection Act at some point to go after the enemies within.
Yep.
And then I want to talk about the case argued before the Supreme Court, Louisiana v. Clay.
Yep.
On Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act, which very well could determine the balance of the House of Representatives for years to come, actually. Then also just the destruction of the White House.
Why not?
Is that legal?
Well, you know, he's not going to touch the East Wing, he's assured. Oops, sorry. It's just in. I mean, it does seem, you know, like so often, what precedent do we apply? But I mean, can anyone, even if they are president of the United States, just take a bulldozer? Though it seems kind of odd to me, the people's house, but there you go. He didn't get a permission from the people. We know that.
Yeah. And then the $230 million from the Justice Department. Oh, yeah.
There's nothing good on that list, but I think there's nothing good in going on now. So.
Okay, let's start with Comey and Letitia James and John Bolton. During the campaign, Trump told his supporters, "I will be your retribution." And I think he meant, I will be my retribution.
Yeah.
Let's talk through the cases. Comey has called this a vindictive prosecution. That seems pretty obvious, doesn't it?
Well, yes, is the short answer. There's actually, it's funny, these things succeed so rarely. Everybody thinks the government has it out for them. And lo and behold, the government does have it out for Comey. I'm an ex-DOJ guy, and this is, to me, rock bottom, ninth circle of hell. I can elaborate. But in terms of the actual wording, there's vindictive prosecution, selective prosecution, and then due process clause and equal protection. He's actually gone through all four. And I think part of the argument will have to do with what precisely do you have in mind, Mr. Comey? But the basic notion that the reason it's being brought is because the president ordered it for political purposes, I think is as, you know, apparent as the nose on his face. And so it is an absolutely...
I mean, what is the case against him?
I'll tell you that case now, but I want to preface it by saying if Trump ordered up, this we'll get to Bolton in a moment, a prosecution that actually had some merit, it still would be a constitutional violation. You can't do that if that's the reason. But here's the case. Your buddy, Ted Cruz, what do you say about... You have a great line about Ted Cruz.
I probably like Ted Cruz more than most of my colleagues, and I hate Ted Cruz.
Exactly. Right. Anyway, so he's questioning him about testimony he gave, Comey gave 4 years before that, about whether he gave a story over to the press. And he says, are you saying that you didn't? And he said, I stand by my testimony from 4 years ago. That, let me just note, as a lawyer, first, it's a true statement. You have to have a false statement for defamation. Second, who gives a crap, which is legal speak for materiality? There's really, you know, lying to Congress is not a crime if you're, you know, lying about your children or whatever. It has to be material to their investigation. So it's a really, really, really lousy.
What was it? What was the charge that he had been involved in? What?
Okay, that in the whole brouhaha over his firing and such, he had played to the press, or his buddy Dan Richman had, or whatever. He says not, but it doesn't, and they say that was a false statement, but it's not. Or, and then, of course, Ted Cruz's question was convoluted, and you wouldn't even know what he was talking about. This is the worst count for a false statement to Congress I've seen, and Comey has a very strong case saying, look at all these times, no one ever brings this case. So in terms of the law on selective prosecution, vindictive prosecution, you have first a really good showing that this case wouldn't normally be brought. But you have a much stronger than that, because when you get to the second part, you have what you never have, an actual email that somehow was published by Trump saying, you know, these guys impeached me twice and conviction. We need justice, saying nothing about. In fact, when he was asked, well, what's the crime? I don't really know, but they're guilty as hell. So it's just completely conclusive proof, it seems to me, of what's going on. And that is, he orders, and indeed, he has a prosecutor say, you know, I don't want to do that. So he brings in someone who's not even a prosecutor.
No, in other words, he had the U.S. attorney resigned.
And that
this.
U.S. attorney was his own choice, longtime Republican, to head the office. And he stood up for, again, what I want to say is the single most important duty of a federal prosecutor, which is not to indict someone when you don't have facts and the law to support it. That's like Kafka-esque to do, right? So the U.S. attorney said, I won't do that, and he stepped down. Trump said he fired him. And then he brought in an insurance lawyer who wouldn't be qualified to be an intern in that office.
Lindsey Halligan?
Halligan. Mm-hmm. Nobody in that office, I've worked in that office, Al, it's a pretty professional office, would even be with her in the grand jury or at the arraignment of Comey. She just went in, you know, we'll find out how bad it was, but she's probably didn't, you know where the door to the grand jury room was.
Well, the arraignment, wasn't that done by the attorneys who they came from North Carolina or something?
Yeah, they had. Well, what her, I think at the indictment, she did all alone. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be, I think, a real comedy of errors. But yes, then it came time to do the arraignment. You know, I was a U.S. attorney. It would be very rare to appear, but wherever you went, you'd have like a phalanx of six people to make sure you weren't so stupid. They couldn't find a single person in Alexandria, so they had to go get a couple people from a whole nother office.
And they're doing the case against Comey?
So it would appear, you know. So the case now has gone to motions. He filed two motions 3 days ago. One was, this is selective prosecution. The other was, she's not even validly appointed, for the same reason as they bounced Alina Habba in New Jersey. It's sort of complicated, the scheme, but basically, once that previous U.S. attorney's interim appointment had run, you can't just put in somebody unless they're a very narrow set of categories, and she ain't.
Will this be tossed before they get to trial?
Yes, I think so. And, you know, Comey and others are saying, oh, we want to go to a jury and be vindicated. And his very fine lawyer is saying, you know, Jim, Liberty, we got to take every good shot. And I think both those defendants all the time, motions to dismiss, they always lose. I think these are two good ones. A point about the second, that she wasn't validly appointed. The judge recused himself because he works with that office all the time. It's actually gone to another judge in another circuit to try that claim. But so we have that and the motion to dismiss. And one other final point. On the motion to dismiss, you know, you normally gets tossed out right away. He, Comey, has asked for discovery. I mean, what's so striking about the case is the strength of the evidence that Trump did exactly what Comey is saying. I think Nachmanoff, if he doesn't grant the dismissal outright, it's got to grant discovery. And that's going to put the White House in an absolute hissy fit.
Now, why did he go after Comey? Was this at the Russian investigation? Why does he hate Comey so much? Comey got him elected.
Well, that's true. That's right. And therefore, after he did, he had wanted to have a little dinner with Comey, and they had that dinner, and he wanted to exact a pledge of loyalty from Comey. And Comey said, no. This was like when we first were discovering March of 2017, what a madman he was. This is when the deputy and others want, do we need the 25th Amendment? So he fired, first chance he got, he fired Comey. Remember, he wouldn't let him take the FBI. He was in California, Comey. He had flown out there on the FBI plane. Trump fired him and said, you can't take the FBI plane home. You have to take commercial aircraft. And then from there, Trump said, law-dee-law, you know, he better hope there aren't tapes. Well, it turned out that, surprise, Trump was lying. He said exactly what Comey said. And so then the combination of that back and forth, including in public settings after Comey was out of office, and the whole Russia thing that he blames everyone, those together have put him on Trump enemy number 1 through 5 somewhere.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Harry Wooden. So we got a new sponsor, Graza, my olive oil of choice. You know, I love to cook for me and Franny and for my kids and grandchildren, for friends. And I love cooking with olive oil. And Graza is a delicious, easy to use, extra virgin olive oil at an affordable everyday price. Graza is always fresh. They pick, press, and bottle all their olives in the same season. You can see the harvest date on every bottle. I never thought about that before, but it's comforting. Graza has two types of extra virgin olive oils to stock your kitchen. There's Sizzle, that's their everyday cooking oil, perfect for roasting, sauteing, and, well, anything you cook. And they also have Drizzle, a flavorful finishing oil that's great for dipping bread and whipping up a salad dressing. That's Sizzle and Drizzle, the name of the two Graza brothers. Speaking of family, my family loves my marinara sauce. It's simple. I slowly saute garlic and onions in Graza's Sizzle oil, put in the canned tomatoes, a bay leaf, and basil, and cook slowly for hours. Perfect for pasta, eggplant parmesan, lasagna. Of course, olive oil is the healthiest fat that I add to my meals. I'd highly recommend Graza for any home chef who likes to cook. So head to graza.co and use Franken to get 10% off and get to cooking your next chef quality meal. That's graza.co and use promo code Franken today for 10% off your first order. Graza, the best olive oil in my kitchen. Okay, let's go to Letitia James.
Yeah.
This is about a mortgage.
The charge against her. Okay, let's go straight to the charge. You know, apparently a lot of people do this, including in Trump land. They have three cabinet officers. No one has mentioned it. But yes, she bought a secondary home, and she says she bought it for a great niece who was in a sort of tough spot in life, so she could live there, and has ever since, rent-free, says James. And the niece testified to a different grand jury, rent-free. But that testimony wasn't heard by the grand jury that indicted her. And the grand jury that indicted her, it's both, by the way, both indictments are just like pieces of trash. They are so poorly done. There's no details. And we don't know really basics about both. But I think what they're saying in James's case is, to get a slightly better mortgage, she said that this was going to be a secondary residence, and it was really an investment property. Why is that? Because the great niece paid some rent, even though the great niece says she didn't. The grand total of sort of loss, if this had happened, $18,000. Every U.S. Attorney's Office have guidelines that say amounts below thus and so, just forget about, throw back in the water. If they're actually, you'll like this, top secret, because if you know that the fraud guideline is $500,000, then you commit a $499,000 fraud and the feds won't take you. So anyway, $18,000 is a joke. Frauds in the federal system are hundreds of thousands of dollars. But yeah, that's the idea. She and on at least one document, because she has others where she didn't, she said this will be a secondary residence, and they're going to have to prove, in addition, including intentionally, knowingly at the time, et cetera, it was going to be a rental property, meaning the great niece would pay some rent, except she says she didn't. Another real dog of a case. Both of these out, you know, all the evidence that goes to Comey also goes to James. He's been so, and James, he's been on the warpath even longer. Of course, she successfully sued him civilly for millions of dollars.
But that wasn't that settlement money was thrown out, right?
Not completely. No. So it was reduced. Mm-hmm. And the settlement itself, it was a verdict.
Yeah. He lost, right.
And it still stands up, even though the Court of Appeals reduced the amount. And she did when she campaigned. I don't know if you were in New York yet at the time. You know, she made it clear she, was interested in investigating Trump. But anyway, for both Comey and James, just the most stark example of something that is plainly unconstitutional, a violation of the principles of federal prosecution, that the reason it's being done, and same thing, Lindsey Halligan trots in there and signs her name. This time she said, there's a very weird detail. She's saying, I didn't even tell my superiors. I just wanted to get it done. You know, she had a lot of stuff to do that day or whatever. So the idea that she would indict a high official and not mention it to Bondi Bland seems incredible. And a final point, these kinds of cases, you have a special section of the Department of Justice that's considered the sort of, you know, jewel in the crown, the public integrity section, or you used to. That's the section that with the Rick Adams prosecution, they basically just have completely demolished. It's gone from 30 lawyers who were all put in a room by Emil Beauvais and said, somebody has to agree to this dismissal or I'm firing everyone. 30 lawyers is now two. It's defunct now. So there's no kind of professional check at all.
Okay. So we've got Bolton.
Yeah. Okay. The first point to make about Bolton is it's a different case.
This is in a different district.
Different office by a, this is the most important. I mean, until Bondi has squandered it, there was a presumption of regularity for what the DOJ did. And this would be an example where it applied. 12-year veteran, head of the National Security Section in Maryland, had been investigating this for a while. So that already is a very big distinction.
What is the charge here, Bolton? Okay.
So the charge is, ironically, something akin to the Mar-a-Lago case, that Bolton didn't follow procedures with classified material. Let me zero in, though. He was writing a book. There was a bitter dispute with the Trump folks about what he could put in. He won that dispute. But at the time he was writing it, like a lot of people, he kept a diary by sending himself emails. So far, so good. But then, and Al, this is really like, huh, bizarre. How could a guy like Bolton be so ham-handed? He CC'd his wife and his daughter, who didn't have classified systems. And in fact, one of them was hacked
by an Iranians or something.
Yeah. So that's like, whoa, John. Now, it all happened in 2018, 2019. We know the Biden folks didn't prosecute, but it seems like maybe this most important detail of sharing it with the wife and daughter hadn't been known. So the first thing you can say about the case is it's different. And the second thing you can say about the case is it's not an obvious loser. The third thing you can say about the case should matter, but I think it maybe won't, which is there's still a contributing factor of Trump's animus for Bolton, or so it seems, that really pushed things. And that's illegal, even if you have a solid charge. That's his lawyers, the same lawyers for James. And he's playing the same tune. You know, they're just coming after me because. But, you know, people who know the system, how carefully, this is part of the Hillary stuff, right? It is really true. You've got to turn square corners with classified information. And it's one thing to have your job, but really it's you got to scratch your head to say, why would Bolton, actually didn't he know better? Because it really it's very bad form that he served everything up to his wife and daughter.
Yeah.
Who, you know, he could have served it to you, non-classified system. So he's, you know, that's different. Now they'll have some motions work, et cetera. But the number one thing to say for me as a DOJ guy is Comey, James, ninth circle of hell, doesn't get any worse. Autocracies do it, not democracies. Bolton is not that case. It's funky, but the other two are flagrantly improper.
Okay, let's talk quickly about this $230 million that,
okay,
that Trump is asking or demanding from the Justice Department. We'll get, because he runs the Justice Department. So he says, I'm suing myself.
Yeah, right. So he says, as if he's blaming himself. No, it's the other way. He is there, and you're right. So who would normally, remember how pissed Trump was when Sessions recused himself? So there's got, you know, really every ethics person would say the recusals have to go all.
Sessions had to recuse himself. He had talked to the Russians and.
Yeah. You know who else has to recuse himself? Todd Blanche is the guy who would normally. Todd Blanche is not only. He's the deputy attorney general. He would make this call. He was not only involved in all the litigation. He continues to assert, even though it's like impossible and unlawful, that he is both the deputy attorney general, but he remains Trump's personal lawyer.
Yeah.
He's elected to serve the people, to take care, et cetera. But when he went down and talked to Ghislaine Maxwell, he was working for Donald Trump, the citizen. Okay, he would be the guy this would go to, but after him, Stanley Woodward did the same.
This is the $230 million it would go to.
So here's what Trump is saying. There is a provision that it's very rarely invoked, but if the department not just indicts you, but like it's way, way illegitimate, meritless, maybe vindictive, you can sue to get fees. Now, it's usually here's how outlandish he's being. When you do that, if it's more than $4 million, it has to go to the very top of the DOJ for review, because it's never like more than $4 million. Mm. And he, you know, the same way suing the New York Times, let's call it $150 billion. He did, $230 million has nothing, no relation to reality. But anyway, he's saying, I am entitled to this. And the first step is this little piece of paper that he actually filed 2 years ago before the election. And that's the basis. Usually the DOJ maybe compromises or more typically says, forget about it, see you in court. But that's right. It would be a total ethical disaster. And everyone is saying that. Even Republican senators are saying how bad it looks. And I just want to add, to me, what's so really galling and repugnant is it's part and parcel of this whole bullshit, many-pronged operation to rewrite the history of January 6th and of his taking those documents. Those were such obviously righteous cases with solid bases that should have been brought. But even doing this in the first place, he's also claiming as part that the search of Mar-a-Lago was illegit. It was totally legit. All of this was solid.
He had taken those documents, and then he said he had returned them, and he hadn't returned them.
Again and again. That, to me, the underlying part that I don't know, Al, what you think. I get worried that the American people, you know, start to think that, I guess maybe the Dems shouldn't have gone after him. And, you know, and it's so, if we had not pursued that case, can you imagine after seeing January 6th, if the department had it. So that's part of what's really disgusting. But the notion, you know, $230 million and that Todd Blanche or anybody who would decide this would work for him, that's such complete ethical violation. you know, I would think whoever does it could lose their license.
Well, I wanted to go over the destruction of the White House. That doesn't seems like you want to get permission for that in some way.
Don't you think? I wonder who this is. You know, certain things Trump does are just so cloddish and ham-handed and obvious. This is one that like steam comes out of your ears because it's, you know, nobody would even think of it. So there's no legal structure. You know that presidents come in and maybe redo the curtains in the Lincoln room. Like this is, and of course he said, I won't touch the East Wing of the White House. And now he's demolishing it.
Yeah.
And we'll have that forevermore, right? I mean, it'll be so sort of, if we get out of this mess alive, what a, such a shameful thing. He's kind of like godifying the White House, the people's house. And yeah, you got to think he has no right to do it, but where does a court even start? You know, you would have a sense of this also. It seems like politically, you know, just such a, you can't have health care. I'm spending $230 million to demolish the White House. You would think that would be something like Epstein that could actually stick, with the American people.
But he says he's paying for this ballroom from charitable donations, from people who are seeking favors from him.
He says that, right, exactly. And that he'll give it to charity. But he backed away from that. He's, by the way, the corporate stuff he seems to have backed away from. But in any event, I mean, what the heck is he thinking is my first reaction. And then legally, it's like, this has to be wrong. But it's so out there from what anyone's ever thought of. What do you point to? He's not taking care that the laws are executed because he's demolishing the White House? That seems right to me, but you know.
Let's move to the deployment of National Guard troops in Portland and Chicago. And the justification for it is that there was a reaction to ICE in the streets. And it seems like ICE, they got out of hand themselves, right? In both cities.
They're the but for cause of what they're saying, which is that we need the National Guard to protect our troops. And yeah, this is an extraordinary situation for the start, because the local officials, when they've done this in the past, California after Rodney King, the local officials said, can you help us out for a couple of days till the ship rights itself? Here you have the governor of Illinois.
That was the Insurrection Act with Rodney King. It's the last time it was invoked.
It was actually, the 10246, but stay the hell out is what they're saying. So you're really right, I think, that the whole problem is that they've caused. Now, they would say, well, we have to do these immigration operations. But that let me start and say, this I think is the single most important thing. We've had, in a half an hour, we've galloped over eight, outrages. This is the single most, I think, worrisome and consequential thing happening in the country. Because he says, we want to protect our federal facilities. Little problem here. You can only do it under the statute he's looking to if either there's a rebellion, like a rebellion, right? There's a dictionary that says,
or insurrection.
Of U.S. authority. Well, insurrection would be, he could go to the whole next step, and we can talk about that. But the statute that he's talking about says it's got to be a rebellion, or the normal forces can't handle the law enforcement problems. Both of those are like so complete, fanciful claims here. Rebellion, I don't think so. You have, say, in Portland, fewer than 30 peaceful protesters and sporadic acts of violence. The judge there said calling it a rebellion is completely untethered to the facts. And many courts now have said that. And then likewise, maybe there's sporadic acts of violence. That's what law enforcement is there, and they can handle it just fine. So this is the, to me, quintessential problem of the Trump era, to kind of use your framing from one of your great books. He's just a lying liar who gets up lying and lies all day. And for the courts, The question comes, what do you do with normally in an emergency situation, courts want to give the president playing the joints, got to act quickly, et cetera. But here, to have an emergency, it's based on a complete, everybody knows, bullshit factual predicate. And if they greenlight it, and this is right now, it could happen before this taping airs, before the Supreme Court. What they've done is say, we'll let him just claim these powers based on facts that don't exist. And if you're Donald Trump, you can take that, it seems to me, and play your emergency card everywhere, including for elections. Emergency, emergency. We need National Guard at every precinct.
Now, the circuit court in the Ninth Circuit.
Chicago.
Well, in Chicago, they ruled against the guard being there.
That's and right.
But in Portland, the Ninth Circuit, on a 2-1 vote, ruled that they could be there, right?
Well, they ruled that they wouldn't put a stay, which is as good as saying that, because they say the administration is likely to prevail. But more than that, just yesterday, Al, there was a vote, and the full Ninth Circuit, with 11, count them, 11 dissents, kept that decision in place. So you have all the higher courts completely, and they really depressingly break along Trump versus non-Trump lines in terms of appointees. But this is now at the Supreme Court anyway.
And we know how they're going to work.
Shadow docket form. So they could, just say relief granted, blah, 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 and it could be that bad. But there's the two-part problem par excellence for the Trump era. Can he get away with just lying? Can they, if something's really wrong and the law's an ass, if you can, what are the district courts who were right there and they're supposed to defer to their findings say? Rebellion? I don't think so. Unable to execute laws? Give me a break. I mean, so clearly fanciful. If that's the basis for getting this power, and then once you have that power unquestioned, you can, emergency anywhere, everywhere. That's how tyrants operate. And, you look at Hungary, you look at Turkey, they take bullshit claims of emergency and use it to run roughshod over constitutional limits. It's the thing I'm most scared of.
And rightly so. I mean, if the Supreme Court decides, I think it decides.
They'll have betrayed us so badly if that happens.
And we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Harry Wood. I love to sleep. I love to get a good 7 to 9 hours every night. And I found out what really helps is a good bed with good sheets and a good pillow. And there's enough in the world to keep you up at night. Your bedding shouldn't be one of them. That's why I'd like to tell you about Ghost Bed. Ghost Bed is a family-run company focused on quality and comfort and cooling, all in an effort to help people like you and me sleep better. Their mattresses are made from premium materials to help regulate temperature throughout the night so that you don't wake up overheated. And they're built to last, backed by a 20 to 25 year warranty. You also get a 101 night sleep trial to make sure that it's the right fit for you. And here's the best part. Ghost Bed mattresses cost up to 50% less than comparable brands. So you're getting real quality at a fair price. I've gotten to check out their great bedding. The Ghost sheets are made of Supima cotton with tensile fibers, specially designed to keep you cool at night while also prioritizing durability and resisting allergens and bacteria growth. The Ghost pillow is a memory foam pillow that promotes cooling. Right now, during Ghost Bed's fall sale, you can get 25% off site-wide for a limited time. Just go to ghostbed.com/franken and use promo code Franken at checkout. That's ghostbed.com/franken, promo code Franken. Upgrade your sleep with Ghost Bed, the makers of the coolest beds in the world. And we are back with Harry Littman. Let's talk about Louisiana v. Clay.
Yep.
Which is about the case before the Supreme Court about the voting maps in Louisiana.
Mm.
After the 2020 census, the state legislature created a map that had one congressional majority black district.
Yep.
Out of six districts, even though the population of Louisiana is one third black. And the U.S. Circuit Court ruled that the state legislature had to draw a new map for 2024 with a second majority black district. So the legislature did a redraw and created a second black majority district.
Yeah.
Then a group described as non-African American brought a suit to challenge the ruling as a product of unconstitutional racial gerrymandering.
Right.
It went to the Supreme Court in the 2024-25 session, the last session. And at the end of the session, the court decided to take it this session. And the suspicion is they may try to get rid of Section 2 entirely or hopelessly weaken it.
Yeah.
Now, we're talking here about majority black districts, or they're called majority-minority district. What's a majority-minority district?
So let me set that up. So a majority-minority district is one in which minority voters are a majority. But if you think about how you can make these crazy quilt maps, this is what Louisiana did. It is one third African American, and they were able to sort of put them all in one. They drew.
They gave them one district.
They live, so they get one. And they given
out
section
of six.
Two, the court said, go back and draw another, which they did. And that happened in the last election. So that's what.
In 2004.
Under section two. I want to take one step back first. This is the Voting Rights Act, which we have always seen as the luminous example of the civil rights era, maybe the most important statute in U.S. history. It had two really strong operative sections, Section 5 and Section 2. The Supreme Court gutted Section 5, just said, we think it's been long.
Section
time
5
enough.
Was that you,
they, and Section 5 was all these states who have the bad history of doing stuff. They've got to ask for permission before they monkey around with changes. And it really every election, the DOJ would say, no, you can't do that. The Supreme Court Roberts just said, it's been long enough. That left Section 2. And most importantly, Section 2 had an effects test. It didn't matter if you were trying to be invidiously prejudiced against minorities. But if you drew one of these crazy maps and it had the effect of disenfranchising or diluting the voting strength based on race, the court would order, you got to draw another.
And that's what happened in Louisiana. They drew one, so one out of six, even though they were 33% of the...
There are currently 15 members of Congress who owe their seat to these rulings in Section 2.
And just 2 years ago, the same court voted 5-4 to add a second majority minority seat in Alabama.
Now, however, the Supreme Court, Justice Thomas, is saying, I think Section 2 itself is unconstitutional, because it discriminates based on race. That's his view. And others are saying, as they did in the Section 5, do we really need it anymore?
I think we have a piece of tape of Kavanaugh saying it's expired.
This court's cases, in a variety of contexts, have said that race-based remedies are permissible for a period of time, sometimes for a long period of time, decades in some cases, but that they should not be indefinite and should have an endpoint. And what exactly do you think the endpoint should be, or how would we know for the intentional use of race to create districts?
One little problem there. Mm-hmm. Congress says the opposite, including in Section 5. They had passed, they had renewed it until 2030, and the court nevertheless said, seems like long enough to us. And the same thing here. Now, they would never pass a new one, this Congress, but they kept renewing it. Doesn't that seem like the people's call, how long you should have it?
Well, he's basically saying racism is gone, and, you know, I would...
Well, that's quite right, that this is intention with a colorblind principle.
Look at the young anyway. Republicans.
Man, right. And the guy who, you know, who got bounced 2 days ago for all his racist taunts. But I just want to cut to the chase, which is, I listened to the argument. I think Section 2 is just going to be in the wastebin of history, meaning the Voting Rights Act, the kind of signal enactment of the civil rights era that the country was so proud of, kind of making the big step to put its racist history behind us, is probably dead.
Or weakened at best.
I think life support, and here's what I mean. In Section 5, they said, we're not overruling it, but everybody subject to it isn't anymore. So it's just got an empty little vessel that anyone in that vessel who makes the changes, but there's no one there. And Section 2, they're going to do the same. They're going to say, we won't overrule it, but we're going to say something like this. This is a very likely possibility. If you're doing it for politics, Thomas is going to say, get rid of it. I vote against it. But the others will say, if you're doing it for politics, not for race, that's okay. Well, that's why they're doing it, of course.
Well, you can't do it for politics, though. You can't do it.
Right now you can't, because if it has the effect of harming race. If they get rid of that, Al, you know, it's all over but the shouting. So really, it would be just about the end of the Voting Rights Act, both sections, it seems to me.
And this could affect the balance of Congress.
100%, starting with these 15 folks, right?
Right.
Now, of course, also one hopeful sign, you know, these are redrawn every 10 years after a census if the Democrats come to power in enough states.
These are southern states. And
Not all yeah. For the Section 2. Not, you know, my others also, the Section 5 ones were.
Yeah, but I mean, most of them are in the South, and they are not going to become Democratic states, and their state legislatures are going to be drawing these up, and they're going to get rid of the majority-minority seats. And
right, they'll just put everybody all into one little district, and that's why it'll look, by the way, like, you know, like that.
And North Carolina just jettisoned a majority-minority seat. This is happening, and it's going to affect that. That will affect the next election. We don't know when they're going to decide this Louisiana case. It may be too late.
Probably by, you know, in the normal course, unlike what they may do for the troops, which is shadow docket, won't be till toward the end of the term next year.
Well, okay, we don't have a lot of good news for folks, do we? Well, sorry we had to talk about so many disturbing things, Harry, but thank you.
Thank you. And look, you know, so many of these, I think, have people more and more. I don't know where you were last weekend, but the No Kings rally, it does feel to me, I keep broaching these comparisons to Hungary and Turkey and the like. We still feel different to me. We still feel like the sort of ballast of our constitutional feelings from, you know, Pledge of Allegiance in first grade means that they're, you know, as crazy as this gets, I think maybe the popular opposition increases. And it's hard to say exactly because we've never been in these straits, but I just don't see his going all the way to, you know, the end of the Democratic experiment as long as A, he's in the 40s and unpopular, and B, there's, you know, popular opposition just based on, it's our Constitution, damn it. You know, get out of here. So
I hope you're right.
I remain somewhat sanguine, but man, you're right. What a rough road we're in.
Good ending. Thank
you. A little valedictory peroration.
Well, I hope you enjoyed listening. That beautiful music is by Leo Kottke, the great Leo Kottke. I want to thank Peter Ogburn for producing this podcast. We'll talk again next week.